And it's Joanne Good here with you on The Late Show, and I'm here until 1 o'clock tomorrow morning. Now, we have been looking at relationships, and my next guest is certainly qualified to discuss the importance of friends and family, or in her case, the lack of them. Helga Gerhardi, a Swiss refugee during the Second World War, spent much of her adolescence fleeing from the Russians and spending life under Hitler's rule. These experiences were published in her first book, which was called Helga, and she has now penned the sequel, The Continuing Story, and she joins me now. Good evening, Helga.
Good evening.
How lovely for you to come in and join me. Can I just ask, the first book, Helga, were they based on your diaries? Did you keep diaries?
A very patchy diary, because during the time when I was a refugee, of course, I had no time to write anything down, but I did afterwards. But I had a diary from quite early age. I think I was only 10 when I already started to write. I always wanted to write. Was sort of a little bit of my ambition. And I'm glad I did, because you forget names. You can remember incidents and events, but you do forget names. And I could, of course, draw on those. I mean, any other things which I mentioned in my first book, like battles and different stages of what Hitler has done, you can look that up. Those are facts. But what happened to me personally, to get and remember the names, that's what I've got from my diary.
Were you listening earlier on when I had Hilly Marshall in, and we were talking about relationships and the importance of family? And I don't know whether when you left Switzerland, whether you had your family with you, did you?
You mean when I left as a refugee?
Yes.
No, I was alone when I was a refugee.
But and how old were you?
20. But that was very unfortunate. We should have been together, but at that particular moment, when the Russians came into East Prussia and nearer to the place where I lived, we were just scattered.
Well, you were in Lithuania?
Near Lithuania, yes. East Prussia. We called it East Prussia. And, of course, towards the end of the war, the Russians did occupy East Prussia. Well, actually, I lived in Königsberg, which even today is still Russian. They've never given it back, because it's now a Russian port. And that was the moment, at that particular moment I left, my brother was evacuated from the school, you know, because during the war, lots of people were evacuated. My father wasn't there, my mother wasn't there. But the Russians were so close, and we could hear them shooting. So, of course, you left. Never mind where the rest of the family was. You just hoped that they would somehow catch up.
And did they?
We did find one another in the end, yes.
How on earth do you manage that? Where were you by this stage? Where were you when you found them? You were in Germany then?
Yes, yes. I got as far as Germany. We had always said if the Russians suddenly would break through and come, we would try and get to a place called Greifswald. It's on the Baltic, where we had friends. And we said, well, if possible, we meet there. Never mind where we are, but that is an address we can have. And the other address we had was in the south of Germany, where my elder sister lived. Because, you see, people from in the west never left when the English and Americans came. They weren't afraid of them. But we in the east, we did. We didn't trust the Russians. And I found my mother already in Greifswald. By the time I got there, of course, I was very ill. I was in a terrible state. I nearly died by the time I arrived there. And I found my father in Hamburg, and we finished up then at a radio station, which was, of course, not occupied because the war was finished. It was all broken up, and there were only huts, and we had a little shed in the back, you know, with a bucket that was supposed to be our toilet, and we had a well in the front. It was actually very, very primitive, but we refused to go into a refugee camp. We didn't want to go and be locked in or anything. And then we registered with the Swiss Embassy again. The Red Cross found my brother. And then I did a trip from Hamburg to the south of Germany on a broken bike to find my elder sister who was living there. And my other sister had turned up there. So we were all together.
And what year was this when you all met up?
1946. And then we decided to go back to Switzerland because it was no point. We had lost everything and there was no point in staying behind now and start again in Germany, because my father had a dairy in East Prussia, and of course to make cheese and butter and so on, that was fine in Germany. But when we came back to Switzerland, he found it very difficult to get a job because there were too many people making cheese.
Now, this is what I find fascinating about your book, because it deals very much with the rural life of Germany in the war years.
Well, this is where I lived, and that's where I grew up. I couldn't join the Hitler Youth because I was Swiss. I could have done, but my father wouldn't let me. I went to school, and of course, when you go to school, you meet the other girls and boys, and so you know what life is like. I think actually what is not realized very often is that although Hitler's done great harm to a lot of people, but the Hitler Youth, the young people being joined together, did a lot of good work. Already in those days, they were occupied all the time, like collecting tins and papers and so on, and helping old people, digging gardens for them and so on. And we had no crime. It was something like Boy Scouts and Girl Guides, I think. And of course, I missed that because I didn't join because I was Swiss. But I did a lot of sport. And
am I right in thinking that you met Hitler?
Yes, yes, that's the story of my first book. That was an accident. I didn't have an appointment. It just happened that I was walking along the road amongst the crowds who were waiting for Hitler, and I wanted to cross the road. The Hitler Youth stood in the front, keeping all the crowds away. And I thought, well, if I'm quick enough, I was a good runner, if I'm quick enough, I could get across the road before Hitler will come. And I did. But I only got halfway through when he came round the corner. Well, as it happened, I had bought some flowers, but not for Hitler. I had bought them for my father because he only used to come home for weekends. So when the cavalcade came round the corner and they saw me, they, of course, assumed I had run into the road to give these flowers to Hitler. And one of the SS men jumped off the car and he came towards me and he said, you can give those flowers to the Führer. So I said, but they are for my father. So he just looked at me, and of course he couldn't let me go. I mean, it was impossible that I walked away with the flowers in my hand, and he just pulled me along. And I'm afraid my arm just came up. I was absolutely petrified, and Hitler took the flowers, and then he said, you are not in uniform, because you see, I didn't have the Hitler uniform on, the brown shirts and the tie. So I said, well, I'm not German, I'm Swiss. But I don't know whether he heard it or not, because people were shouting and heil and screaming. And then the SS man said, well, you can go now. And he just sort of pushed me a little bit, and I got to the other side of the road. So,
clutching your flowers.
Oh, yes, I lost my flowers.
Kept those to your bosom. This is, as you say, is in your first book, Helga. And the second book is also concerned with when you go back to Switzerland. And you didn't stay there long, did you?
No, I didn't stay very long in Switzerland. Because, see, when I came back, I wasn't all that happy in Switzerland. Switzerland didn't know what it was like to have a war. They'd been neutral. There was no shortage of food or clothes or nicely decorated houses and flowers. Also, it was always very obvious that we were emigrants because we didn't speak the Swiss dialect. Having grown up in Germany, I only spoke a pure German.
But in Helga, did you go back to your home that you'd had before?
No.
You left Switzerland?
We finished up, actually, in Lucerne. We wanted a bigger town because we all had to learn something.
But did you have the money to live somewhere else? I mean, how financially well off were you to settle?
Nothing.
No.
We didn't even have a penny. We had nothing at all. But the Swiss government promised to give us a start, and they did. I studied medicine before, but of course I couldn't carry on with that because they wouldn't pay for that. But they were quite prepared to pay for a 6 months course of in a commercial college. So I thought, fine, I'll learn shorthand typing and bookkeeping, and let's go from there, because the idea was get a job as quickly as possible. And of course, once you had your wages after 1 month, that was a start. They also gave us enough money to start a flat again, to buy the furniture. They give you lump sum, so it was up to you. If you bought very expensive furniture, you had nothing left for the carpet. So, you know, it was a matter of sort it out. And my father had to sign that if ever he got any money back, what he had owned in Germany, that he would pay this back. Well, my father was a very rich man, and I always remember him telling us that he signed it, and he said that he would pay double what they have lent him. But I'm afraid we've never got anything back.
So you didn't stay long in Switzerland?
No. Once I was trained, I took a job in a hotel, and I quite liked it, and I decided this is the what I want to do later on. But for that, I needed two languages, English and French. And as I've only know, well, I wasn't very good in English and French because this was only just what I've learned at school. I decided to go to England as an au pair girl.
And that's where we'll pick up the story in just a moment, because it's the love story I wanted you to talk about. And you have you have your partner in here with you at the moment. Yes, I will let you take a photograph, and we'll be back in just a minute. And it's Joanne Good with you here on The Late Show, and my guest this evening is Helga Gerhardy, and her book is called Helga, and Helga was a Swiss refugee during the Second World War who returned to Switzerland, found herself fairly rootless, and embarked on the job as au pair in England. Now, au pair, I tend to think is a fairly modern word and modern expression. I didn't realise there were au pairs in, what would it be, 1949, was it?
No, this was 1947.
1947?
Yes, mm-hmm. 1947.
So what family were you going to au pair for?
Well, I went to an agency first, mm-hmm. and they suggested several places. I think I had one in Bristol and one in London. But the thing was, I already met my future husband there, because what happened was he arrived with his sister, in a column of quite a number of other people, and we had given him the wrong room, because we assumed that this was husband and wife, and I suddenly, working in the office, of course, discovered they were brother and sister, so we very quickly had to move around the different rooms. And with that, my attention was already drawn to these two young people. And after that, I knew his face. I knew his name, because his name was Ronald. He used to keep on coming and change money to play billiards, because next to the office we had a little billiard table. Well, I never talked very much to him. I only just sort of said yes and no. But one day they were going to give a fancy dress party, and the staff wasn't allowed to join, but the cook, Henri, he was a very nice chap. He said, "We are all going to go, and we're going to dress ourselves in such a way that nobody's recognizing us." So we all dressed up like ghosts. We had sheets around us all pinned up in the front, and then we had white sort of pointed hats on with slits for eyes and mouth. And we rode out on the lake and came back in the dark, and we kept on sort of making these ghostly noises. We didn't intend to land, but somehow they just pulled us in, and there we all stood, and we didn't know what to do because we hadn't really planned anything. And then somebody said, "Well, get some people to dance, you see." So I went, and I got Ronald, because I thought, well, he always comes and changes money, and I sort of know him a little bit. But I didn't talk very much to him. I was very quiet because I didn't want him to recognize me. Well, the next morning he came to the office, and he said, "You were a very nice ghost last night." I said, "How did you know it was me?" Well, apparently he repairs watches and clocks, and once he sees a watch, he never forgets it. He'd recognized me by my watch, because my hands were sticking out. Well, I told him that I intended to come to England, and when I found a place in Hemel Hempstead, the matron of a children's home offered me a job. I wrote to him, or actually Ronald Bobbersley, his name, he started to write to me straight away. As a matter of fact, he went home and told his parents already that he was going to get married to a Swiss girl, but he hadn't told me. Anyway, this particular children's home wasn't very far from where he lived. So he just went and saw it, and then he wrote to me, and he says, "It's a very nice home, and that's the place where you ought to go to. Don't go to London or to Bristol." So I came over.
And that's what you decided to do. Now, Helga, at this time, I think you were attached to someone else, weren't you?
Yes.
You were out walking with somebody.
Yes, I had a very nice friend, but he was already divorced, and he had a small child, and he was much older than myself. I wasn't sure of him. I thought he was a bit too old. Bob was young, and anyway, I left Switzerland not with the thought of getting married in England. I quite definitely didn't, although my mother had a feeling I would never come back, because when she said goodbye to me, she said, "I have a feeling you will never come back." I didn't come back, that's true, but it wasn't, you know, I thought maybe I might even find another job in England. But once I was...
You weren't actually welcomed, were you? I mean, you had quite a rigorous health check when you arrived in England, didn't you?
Well, I was a bit frightening, yes. I had a health check before I left Switzerland, and I had also a certificate. But when I arrived at the border, they asked me to come into a cubicle, and they wanted to examine me because they were in those days very careful who came into the country. Well, I refused because I felt I had a Swiss certificate saying that I had passed the health check, and I just absolutely refused. And in the end, they agreed I could pass because I had my permit and the health check, and that was that, yes.
When you say when you left Germany and you returned to Switzerland, you found it very disorientating. Was it the same when you then came to England, or did you feel as though you'd come home when you came to England?
I liked England straight away. I think people were understanding. They've been through the bombing. I think the first thing that shocked me was they were all walking about without stockings. In those days, you see, you still
with white mottled legs.
Yes, but you still had coupons, and that was one of the things they wouldn't buy. They wouldn't buy stockings because I don't know how many. I think it was probably two or three coupons, but you could save those. So they were all walking about with bare legs. That was a bit of a shock to me, but a lot of them wore trousers, much more than they ever did in Switzerland, because in those days they didn't wear trousers. But they were all very kind and very understanding, and what surprised me so very much was when I told them a little bit about my German experience, they didn't mind that I had lived in Germany, because you see, this was just after the war, and there was a lot of hatred against the Germans. That was still there, but of course I was Swiss, so they felt I had suffered unjustly.
And did Bob's family feel that?
Yes.
Were you a little bit apprehensive when you...
I didn't tell them an awful lot about it. They never asked, and of course, if I met any strangers and I said I was Swiss, they always assumed, oh, you are lucky. You know, you couldn't have been in the war because Switzerland was neutral. And I very often felt it was too much to start to explain again what really had happened. So I didn't really talk about it, you know. Actually, I never talked about it until I wrote my first book. I never did. Even my husband didn't know.
Really?
He only knew I was a refugee, but...
Was that... That's why I'm saying... my first question was going to be to you, Helga, instead of... Did you keep diaries? My first question was going to be, is this a therapy for you? Is it something that had to be written about for you?
Yes, it had to. My children wanted it. They said, they felt, if I can't talk about it, why not write?
Mm-hmm.
So at first I only wrote for myself. But then, well, can I have a look? Can I have a look, you see? And once they started to have a look, they felt it was quite a story. Because you see, when you write something you don't want to think about, you go through it all again. You know, you get cold again, you get hungry again. Everything you've experienced, you experience a second time. And that was the reason why I had pushed it away all the time.
Did Bob sit you down? I mean, did you have long nights sort of talking into the night? Because this is a whole side of you that you'd never shown him.
Yes, we started to talk about it. And I think it is therapy, you're right. Because once you start writing... Then you can talk. And I did. And of course, I was always a little bit afraid that my English might not be good enough, so he had to do corrections just in case I made mistakes. So he read it actually two or three times. Yes, then we started to talk. I think we even talk now about it from time to time because of the two books, of course. You know, it still comes up because I get fan mail, and he says, well, let's have a look. What did they write? And of course, then when he reads about it, we discuss it again.
Have you ever been back to East Germany?
No.
You haven't been back to that radio station?
I've been back to Leipzig because we wanted, you know, after they opened the borders again. But I don't want to go back to Königsberg where we lived. I've got, I met a school friend again, and she's been back and taken some videos. But she said she wouldn't go again. The place where we lived is very, like I said, it's still Russian. And it's shocking what the Russians have done to the different places, to the graveyards, and to the... I don't want to see it. I want to remember it the way it was when I was young, because I had happy times there. That was my childhood, and I don't see why I should have it destroyed by just going back and look at it again.
Have your children shown an inclination to go?
No. I don't think they would want to go there. Because it isn't what I describe. It's different now. You see, it's destroyed. And the Russians have... what they have built there is shocking. We had a most beautiful old castle. It could have been repaired. I taken every single stone away because I didn't like it, because it's too German. I mean, the Kaiser was born there, and they just couldn't bear it to have that standing there. So it's gone.
Helga, it's fascinating. I could talk to you for hours, but unfortunately we're running out of time. I hate to judge every book's success by the small screen, but you have received a lot of fan mail, you've received a lot of publicity for this book. Have you been approached by any television companies or film companies?
No, I haven't. I would like to. I think it ought to be told. I feel if the story is told everywhere, maybe it will help not to have another war. We've got things in Bosnia and Yugoslavia now. It's a repeat, and I wish people would realise it's not the soldier only, it's the civilians that suffer such a terrible lot too.
Helga Gerhardy, thank you very much indeed. The book is called Helga, The Continuing Story. It's published by Verona, and it's priced £7.99. Helga and Bob, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.